Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 20 as we begin today. You remember last time that David escaped from King Saul and went to Samuel the prophet. Now that means he left Gibeah and went north a couple of miles to Ramah. And Saul didn't give up trying to kill him, sent three arrest parties, and each of them were possessed by the Holy Spirit of God and forced to prophesy rather than being able to arrest David and bring him back to Gibeah to be executed. Saul tried to come and personally get it done, and God took possession of him and forced him to strip off his royal robes and lay down on the ground and prophesy all the rest of that day into the night. And that's a rather ironic way that God basically told Saul, back off. Do not try to touch David, my anointed one. So David is going to leave Ramah. Probably while Saul is doing all this prophesying. And it says in chapter 20, verse 1, David fled from Naioth. Remember, that's the name of the dormitory area, apparently, in Ramah, and came and said before Jonathan, what have I done? What's my guilt? What's my sin before your father that he seeks my life? So David apparently runs back, first of all, to Gibeah and hooks up with his best buddy, his big brother type, the prince, Jonathan, and says, what's going on with your dad? Why is he trying to kill me? Now, Jonathan has been kept out of the loop on purpose. So verse 2, he said to him, far be from it. You shall not die. Behold, my father does nothing, either great or small, without disclosing to me. And why should my father hide this from me? It's not so. So Jonathan is like, David, no. I know dad would tell me about anything big that's going on, and I've heard nothing about this. So it can't be true. Maybe it's other people that are causing the trouble. Verse number 3, but David vowed again, saying, your father knows full well that I found favor in your eyes, and he thinks, don't let Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. But truly, as he who is lives, and as your soul lives, there is but a step between me and death. So David says, look, Jonathan, your dad knows that you and I have a very close personal relationship. He's keeping this from you. And I'm swearing to you in the name of the Holy One and by your soul that you and I are best friends, I am so close to being killed right now. Verse 4, Jonathan then said to David, whatever you say, I'll do for you. So that shows you how close they are, that even though Jonathan doesn't believe that his dad is really out to get David, he will do whatever it is that David feels is necessary to get this thing sorted out. So, here's the plan. Verse 5, David said to Jonathan, behold, tomorrow is the new moon. Now, that's the first visible crescent of the new moon after the sun goes down. So it's the first day of the month. Remember, the Jewish days start at sunset. And so the first visible crescent of the new moon after the sun goes down, that's the first day of the month. First day of the month is a day off. It's a day of celebration. It's a day of thanksgiving. It's a day of worship God and sitting around and enjoying the company of your loved ones. So David said to Jonathan, behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I should not fail to sit at the table with the king. But let me go, that I may hide myself in the field till the third day at evening. So the normal procedure evidently, was that on the first day of the month, all of Saul's family came together for one big meal. And so David was expected to be at the big dinner table, sitting not too far, probably, from King Saul. Verse number 6. Well, verse 5, first of all, let's remind ourselves. David says, I'm not going to go to the meal. I'm going to go hide out at a specific place in the field. It might be the same place that he hid out the last time that Saul was really mad at him, and he went to Jonathan and got it taken care of. Verse 6, if your father misses me at all, then say, David earnestly asked leave of me to run to Bethlehem, his city, for there is a yearly sacrifice for all the clan. So he asks Jonathan to use a cover story. Yes, we would term this a lie. But it is a top secret operation that's going on here. So I prefer to term this as a cover story. So he says, I want you to use the cover story that I needed to go back to Bethlehem for an annual sacrifice that my brother expected me to come to. Verse 7, if he says, good, it'll be well with your servant, but if he's angry, then you know that harm is determined by him. So if Saul is perfectly fine with me being absent from the dinner table on the first day of the month, then everything apparently is blowing over. But if he's really mad, then you know he's up to no good against me. Verse 8, therefore, deal kindly with your servant, for you have brought your servant into a covenant of he who is with you. But if there is guilt in me, kill me yourself, for why should you bring me to your father? And David says, look, Jonathan, if there really is something wrong with me, if I am an enemy of your father, if I'm an enemy of the kingdom, then I would prefer you just execute me on the spot right here and now. Get it over with. Instead of letting your father drag this thing out. Jonathan said, far be it from you. If I knew that it was determined by my father that harm should come to you, would I not tell you? And David said to Jonathan, who will tell me if your father answers you roughly? And Jonathan said to David, come, let's go out into the field. So they both went out into the field. Jonathan said to David, he who is the God of Israel, be witness. When I've sounded out my father about this time tomorrow or the third day, behold, if he is well disposed toward David, shall I not then send and disclose it to you? But should it please my father to do you harm, he who is, do so to Jonathan and more also, if I don't disclose it to you and send you away that you may go in safety. May he who is be with you as he has been with my father. If I am alive, still alive, show me the steadfast love of he who is that I may not die, and do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever, when he who is cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. Now, this is interesting. This is the arrangements for the signal that are being engaged in here. But in these arrangements, Jonathan reveals the apparent knowledge that he has that David is scheduled by God to be the next king of Israel. So David's apparently shared that information with him. And Jonathan seems to be okay with that. And so he says, David, I want you to expand on our agreement, our divine vows, that you will be kind to me in your administration, and if I'm not around, that you'll be kind to my family. Now, why would he bring that up? Because in a lot of the Middle Eastern kingdoms of this period, and even in the periods that follow, the common practice when there was a change in dynasty, that is, a change in the ruling family, was to totally annihilate any of the potential heirs or the producers of heirs in the last family, because you didn't want anyone to rise up as a challenge to the new administration. So David promises Jonathan not to do anything like that, that he will treat Jonathan and his family members with kindness and compassion, and with the steadfast love of God himself. And David is fine with making that agreement. So verse 16, Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, let's go ahead and read from verse 14 again. If I'm still alive, show me the steadfast love of he who is, that I may not die. Do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever, when he who is cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. So the expectation that David is going to be getting rid of his own enemies once he becomes king, and he doesn't want his family to be thought of as an enemy. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, may he who is take vengeance on David's enemies. And Jonathan made David swear again by his love for him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. Then Jonathan said to him, tomorrow is the new moon. You will be missed, because your seat will be empty. On the third day, go down quickly to the place where you hide yourself, when the matter is in my hand, and remain beside the stone heap. I'm going to shoot three arrows to the side of it as though I were shooting at a mark or a target. Behold, I'll send the young man, saying, go find the arrows. If I say to the young man, look, the arrows are on this side of you, take them, then you are to come, for as he who is lives, it's safe for you, and there is no danger. If I say to the youth, behold, the arrows are beyond you, then go, for he who is has sent you away. And as for the matter of which you have spoken, behold, he who is between you and me forever. So now we get to the actual signal. On the third day, because we're on the last day of the previous month, so that's day number one. Day number two in the series is the first day of the new month. And day number three is the second day of the month. So Jonathan is going to check with his dad on the new moon meal in the evening. And then if that doesn't happen, then he'll check with him on the next meal, on the beginning of the second month, or second day of the month. And so then that following day, as in the daylight hours, that's when they'll meet. And Jonathan is going to target practice with his arrow. And he's going to either undershoot the target, in which case, when he sends the guy to retrieve the arrows, he'll say, no, they're this side of you. This side, come closer to me. That means, David, come in, it's safe. But if he overshoots the target on purpose, and the guy runs out there, and Jonathan says, no, you got to go farther. Go, go, go. That means, David, it's not safe. You need to go. And so that's the agreed upon signal. Verse 24. So David hid himself in the field. And when the new moon came, the king sat down to eat food. The king sat in his seat, as at other times, on the seat by the wall. Now he's acting paranoid. He sits where there's no possibility of anyone getting behind him. And so he can keep an eye on everybody in the room. And so Jonathan sat opposite him, and Abner, that's Saul's cousin, the son of his uncle, sat by Saul's side, but David's place was empty. Now that almost sounds to me as if David sits opposite Abner, so that it's Saul, Prince Jonathan across from him, Abner on one side of Saul, and David on the other side. So Saul did not say anything that day, for he thought, well, something's happened to him. He's not clean. Surely he's not clean. If you were to get sick and have some sort of discharge from your body, or you touch something unclean, then you would not come to the dinner table. You would stay away because you would not want to pass that ceremonial uncleanliness to other people at the dinner table. So it was not terribly uncommon that people would not come to the community dinner table because of that. So Saul assumes that's probably the problem. But the ceremonial purification was to basically wash yourself, and then you would be clean for the next meal. And so he might have missed the first meal of the month, but the meal of the second day of the month, he should be at. Verse 27, but on the second day, the day after the new moon, David's place was still empty. And Saul said to Jonathan, his son, why has the son of Jesse not come to the meal either today, yesterday or today? And Jonathan answered Saul with the cover story. David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem. He said, let me go, for our clan holds a sacrifice in the city, and my brother has commanded me to be there. So now, if I've found favor in your eyes, let me get away and see my brothers. For this reason, he's not been able to come to the king's table. So the cover story has been presented, and now the response is what they're looking for. Verse 30. Then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said to him, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman. Now that sounds so Bible-ish. The literal thing that he said here is USOB. He refers to him in a curse phrase that is still in common practice to this day in our society, and it's intended to be an insult to the person that you're speaking it to because you're angry at them and you have contempt for them. So he cusses his son out, basically. You son of a perverse woman, you SOB, do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom shall be established. So he curses out his son and says, I know you and he are so good close friends. And you are killing your own chances at the kingdom by allowing him to be that way. Now listen to the next part. Therefore, send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die. Saul knows that his son, Jonathan, is lying about where David is at. That he knows where David is at and that he's protecting David. And he wants Jonathan to produce him instantly so that he can be killed. Jonathan answered Saul, his father, why should he be put to death? What has he done? But Saul hurled his spear at him to strike him, and so Jonathan knew that his father was determined to put David to death. So Jonathan gets the same treatment that David has had on two separate occasions, the most recent being just a few days ago, when David was almost skewered by the thrown spear. Now, thankfully, probably through the power of the Holy Spirit, Jonathan is also able to dodge his father's murderous throw. And so verse 34, Jonathan rose from the table in fierce anger and ate no food the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David because his father had disgraced him. So Jonathan knows that David is correct, that Saul has come to this conclusion that he's not going to be able to be talked out of, that David is an enemy of the kingdom of the king and must be killed. And so Jonathan has no other choice but to help David get away. Verse 35, in the morning, Jonathan went out into the field to the appointment with David, and with him a little boy, so his little target practice helper. And he said to his boy, run, find the arrows that I shoot. And as the boy ran, he shot an arrow beyond him, so he intentionally overshoots the target. When the boy came to the place of the arrow that Jonathan had shot, Jonathan called after the boy and said, is not the arrow beyond you? And Jonathan called after the boy, hurry, be quick, don't stay. And so Jonathan's boy gathered up the arrows and came to his master, but the boy knew nothing. Only Jonathan and David knew the matter. And Jonathan gave his weapons to his boy and said, go, carry them into the city. And as soon as the boy had gone, David rose from beyond the stone heap and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times. So he shows humble respect to this older man, only probably about 10, maybe 15 years older than himself. But it's like he's been like a big brother to him. And thanks him effectively for checking this stuff out. Even though now he knows what's coming next. He knows he can't go back to the palace. Saul is just too far over the edge now. And that means he has to leave Jonathan. He has to leave Michal. He has to leave all his other family and friends and go on the run. And so he bows before Jonathan three times. They kissed one another and wept with one another, David weeping the most. And then Jonathan said to David, go in peace, because we have sworn both of us in the name of he who is, saying, he who is shall be between me and you, between our offspring and your offspring, my offspring and your offspring forever. And he rose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. So they are brokenhearted that everything is just screwed up. It's all messed up because of King Saul. And they will not be able to be together openly ever again. They'll have another secret meeting. But Jonathan, and I have to share with you here my own sorrow about this reality. Jonathan has to choose at this point. He could have gone with David because he knows that David is a righteous man, and he apparently knows that David is the future king. He could have gone with him, but he chooses to stay with his father, the father that wants to kill his best friend and just now tried to kill him. He chooses to stay with his father, and I believe the reason he does is because his righteous soul hopes that he might be able to still save his father. Because his father is a bad man. His father is a tyrant. His father is an evil, wicked individual. But Jonathan hopes that as long as his father draws breath, he might still be redeemed. He might still be saved. So Jonathan is going to stick with Dad. And that will cost Jonathan his life. And we'll talk about that later. We've only got about 3 minutes left, so we'll just barely introduce this next thing. Chapter 21 says, then David came to Nob to Ahimelech the priest. Now, Nob appears to me to be a place associated with Gibeon, which is where the tabernacle is located. It's probably the residency area for the priests that are on duty at the tabernacle. So David, this is what he's done. He escaped, first of all, from Gibeon and went up to Ramah. That's a couple of miles. Then he apparently leaves Ramah and goes back to Gibeah secretly and meets with Jonathan. So that's another couple of miles. And then he leaves Gibeah, and he can't go back to his house, so he goes up to the tabernacle, because he's got a plan in mind here. And that's about a little over 3 miles. And he meets with the high priest of this time. Ahimelech is the son of Ahitub, who was the son of Phinehas, who was the son of Eli. So that's the family line that we're talking about. Ahimelech is the great-grandson of Eli. So Ahimelech came to meet David trembling and said to him, "Why are you alone and no one with you?" So it is unusual for David to show up by himself, and this makes Ahimelech nervous. David said to Ahimelech, the priest, "The king has charged me with a matter and said to me, 'Let no one know anything of the matter about which I send you and with which I've charged you. I have made an appointment with the young men for such and such a place. Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread and whatever is here.'" Now, David has apparently, perhaps through Jonathan, sent messages to the men he can trust in his unit, because he's a commander of thousands. So he sent for his most trustworthy military members to meet him at a specific place. And so he has gone here to the Gibeon tabernacle in hopes that he can get some food supplies for them and also to pick up a weapon, because he doesn't have one. He didn't grab one before he left the house. And so Ahimelech is going to be his source for both of these things. But because we're out of time today, we will have to come back and tell that part of the story next time we get into the Word.